You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
It's fun to eat supper with your family, especially when there is good food on the table.
Welcome to episode 213 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Matt Bledsoe from the Film Feast to discuss a 1997 film where the star of the series A Different World teams up with the host of Iron Chef America for a martial arts road trip. Starring Mark Dacascos, Kadeem Hardison, and Brittany Murphy, directed by Steve Wang, it's Drive. But first...
Yes, Henry has a reason for being here. So have all the others. A little investigation into those reasons should be interesting, and might answer some of your questions about...
The Forgotten Filmcast.
Welcome to your favorite drive-in theater and a sparkling new season. Watch our screen and local newspapers for all the fine shows coming this way. Show after show will feature the latest hits, the biggest stars for fun-filled, pleasure-packed evenings. Relax, come as you are, and spend an enjoyable night out with the entire family. No parking problems, no babysitting problems. And there are always tasty snacks at our modern refreshment stand.
Thanks, folks. And once again, welcome back.
Names of merchants who give dividend tickets are listed in the lobby of the theater and on circulars at the concession stand. Dividend tickets will be accepted on all standard box office priced films. So take a circular with you today and start saving dividend tickets tomorrow when you shop. See your next movie... completely free.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
Meet Wesley.
He's such a good boy.
He's a model student.
What's the matter, retard? Can't you talk?
But when it comes to girls...
Have you even talked to her?
He's got a lot to learn.
Studies have shown that guys get much further with girls after they talk.
It's time...
He got his education.
I'm Miss Zenobia, the new biology teacher.
Holy Mother of God!
She has come to teach.
Sexual reproduction. Any volunteers?
Me.
You see, I'm researching new forms of vitamins.
And Wesley is the perfect subject.
Now drop your pants.
What happened, man? Your mom slipped some Vivarin into your milk or something?
He's an experiment out of control.
She gave me some kind of shot. I seem to be having some after effects.
What kind of effects?
He's growing out of his head.
Gross.
Is it working?
Oh, yes, it's working.
Now, the school brain...
has been chosen for a greater purpose.
...has become the most popular student body.
Teach me the meaning of the word pleasure.
Is its meaning?
Doctors from another world...
Let me get this straight. You guys are aliens from another planet.
...have made him the most wanted man on Earth.
I'm being chased by aliens. Radical.
Far out.
What the hell is this?
You're a man and I'm a woman.
I'm with you so far.
Good work, son.
That Earth boy stole the last bottle of the formula.
Judy Landers, Troy Donahue, Edie Williams, and Billy Jacoby. Dr. Alien.
Stallone.
Think about me.
Travolta.
I've never been called that before.
Estevez.
This is gnarly!
Swayze.
How could I forget?
A galaxy of cameos like this could only be in one movie. Beach Babes from Beyond.
That was a UFO.
I'd like to be abducted by alien space babes and have close encounters of the 69th kind.
The movie that poses the cosmic question, what would happen if aliens from outer space landed in the middle of a summer beach party?
God, I love California.
The aliens are coming. They're armed. They're dangerous. And they're wearing bikinis.
I have one of those. Could I get one of those two, please?
They're hot. They're sexy. And they're looking for Earthlings.
Who is that girl?
Holy shit! You're a space babe!
You got it!
If you think all extraterrestrials look like little green men, then see Beach Babes from Beyond. The final frontiers of space have never looked better.
You're a beach babe from beyond?
That's your ass, dude.
Beach Babes from Beyond. From Torchlight Entertainment.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, showtime!
Jeez, what happened? They cut the funding for the highway patrol or something?
Got special instructions. Nothing personal. I knew these guys weren't real cops, man.
No, real cops. Real dirty.
Oh, you better slow your roll, big fella. This is the original Five Fingers of Death right here.
How they all?
See ya.
I got a funny feeling we're gonna see some familiar faces.
Funny fit? Well, your definition of funny and mine must be completely different, because I don't see a damn thing funny.
Mr. Wong!
Face to face again.
You have become one festering boil on my ass, Turbo Drive.
Hi, excuse me. Hey, man, I don't know you, and you don't know me, and I don't know what you want, and I really don't give a damn. I got a mission to get home and catch videos.
Hey, so... Bob Marley, quit your wailing. this gravel pit puts me in mind of that little trip we took to Kentucky a few years back.
Was that when we took out the governor?
That was New Mexico. Kentucky was the VP of Psychoplasmics. You remember that roast chicken we ate?
Damn, that was good. Them little garlic taters.
Mm-hmm. Just shoot us, Madison. Don't bore us to death.
No, whoa, Madison. Just shoot him, okay? I enjoy chicken as much as the next man.
Man after my own heart.
Yeah, hey, you ever been to Popeye's chicken?
Popeye's?
Yeah, real spicy recipe.
Extra spicy?
It'll flip your wig, cousin.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Kill this guy.
Okay, our movie this time is Drive from 1997, and joining me to discuss this film is Matt Bledsoe from the Film Feast. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Todd. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on the show. Please take a moment here to tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do over there on the Film Feast.
Okay, yeah. So just a lifelong movie fan, and, you know, during the pandemic 2020, I got the itch to start a podcast and started the Film Feast podcast. And it's a weekly show where we kind of have just like long form, free flowing conversations about movies. Usually it's a one movie topic. I think I'll pick a movie and talk about that. We talk about things we've seen lately. And sometimes we do like top five lists or top 10. Yeah, it's kind of a hard show to sell because it's very structureless and very kind of formless. But I mean, every week's a different movie. We deep dive. We go on sometimes for a while. But I just have fun talking to people about movies because I don't get that in my, you know, normal day-to-day life. So I found all these people who love talking about movies like I do. We just have some pretty fun conversations. So it's just a good time, really, is all it is.
Sounds like a similar situation to what I've experienced because, yeah, I mean, definitely I've connected with more people online who I can chat movies about in my own life. I mean, you know, my wife and kids and friends and workmates and all that kind of stuff. Just, you know, I don't rattle on with about movies with them too much. Or they actually probably would say the opposite. They probably say I do, you know, but not to the extent that I do on the podcast. That's for sure.
Yeah, nobody in my real life wants to talk about like Hong Kong action movies for 3 hours at a time.
Oh, so, come on. No.
Gotta find better friends.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, and I mean, one of the things I was going to say about your show that I do appreciate is that you are kind of all over the place when it comes to the movies that you discuss. I mean, you know, at one point you might be talking about something that's kind of considered a classic, or another you're talking about things that are new in the theater. I guess, you know, what gets you more excited? Is it going back into the past, or is it getting to the theater and seeing the new stuff?
Honestly, at this point in my life, it's probably digging into the old stuff. Like, I love going to the theater to see new stuff, but most of the time the show we do older movies. Sometimes they're not too old. But I mean, a lot of 80s and 90s, I think, because that's like my bread and butter is like 80s and 90s movies, what I grew up on. And it's funny we're talking about a 90s action movie on this show. I feel like 90s action, if you had to really pare it down, that's the thing that's probably come up the most on Film Feast. But I am all over the place, which is how I watch movies. I feel like I, you know, will go from like Shawshank Redemption to like John Woo's like Face Off, you know. It's like, or I'll watch like an obscure Hong Kong movie and then watch some, I'll go watch Dune 2 the same day, or like, I, you know, I'm all over the place. I'm open to watching anything, and that's kind of the fun part for me of being a movie watcher, is like you have so many different avenues to explore. But I mean, at the end of the day, 90s action specifically is probably my bread and butter, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same way. I like to hit a lot of different things. I've often wondered if people happen upon my Letterboxd page or something like that, you know, if they looked at the movies that I've watched recently, that they'd be like, wow, this is weird. Because like you said, I think last week I watched like Dune 2 one day, and then like another day I was watching like an old Bowery Boys movie from the 40s, you know, so it's just like all over the place. And that's one of the great things about movies, is that there's so much stuff out there, so much we get to discover. I was going to mention one of the first episodes that kind of, you know, got me listening to your show. And I was like, okay, this is intriguing. And I want to find out more about what this guy's doing, maybe get him on my show. You did a show back, I think it was last October, where you ranked the Nightmare on Elm Street series. And I was like, well, there's a daunting task right there.
oh yeah, that was a good time. Not, it was hard because I like so many of those movies. That's what made that tough, is that I like so much of the Nightmare on Elm Street series, and I was like, how do I rank these things that I like so much? And that was a fun one though, because it was kind of like you're almost splitting hairs trying to rank that series. For me, it was close. But yeah, I love doing stuff like that. We do some of those ranking episodes. Those are so much fun. But they can be challenging, though, because it's sometimes tough to rank these things.
It is. I mean, I go nuts when it comes to trying to do that type of thing, because I'm like, the next time I watch these, I may do a completely different order. You know, I never want to commit to, you know, just putting it down on paper or putting it down on Letterboxd or whatever. This is my official ranking of these films, because who knows? My mind might change. When it comes to Nightmare on Elm Street, though, I mean, I was listening to you and I was going, well, you know, 3 and 1 are going to be in the top 2 slots. That's just the way it goes. There's no way around that.
I think they were for me. I can't speak for my guest. I think he did some things that that surprised me, if I remember right. It's kind of like, those two were, I got to be my top 2 favorites. Those are the cream of the crop, I would say.
I would struggle though not to maybe sneak 2 in there as well. Just I have a soft spot for 2. It's just, it's one of those great examples of a horror sequel that just goes bonkers, you know. And like, I can point to many other long running horror series where they've done this with an entry, whether it's like Texas Chainsaw 2 or Prom Night 2 or Amityville 2. It seems like a lot of times the second part is nuts, you know, and Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is that same way.
It's like, yeah, it's like they don't know what to do at that point. I like 2 as well, just for like how weird it is. And it's like they didn't know quite what to do in Nightmare 2. So they kind of like go in this direction that they don't ever really go back to. Like, mm-hmm, yeah. Some of the rules aren't set. And then Wes Craven comes back for 3, and I feel like they get on more of like a path. But like, yeah, right. I admire 2 for its like boldness, and like, it's different than a lot of the other movies in the series. Like it's they're trying some stuff because they haven't quite figured it out yet.
I used to always joke with people because I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, actually in the town where Wes Craven went to college, and right in my neighborhood was an Elm Street. So we used to kid people and say, that's the Elm Street. That's where he got the idea from. Who knows?
Oh yeah. Oh, that would have scared me as a kid. I wouldn't be near an Elm Street.
Well, let's get on to this movie we have today. It's not a horror movie. You know, we take these little sidetracks here from time to time. But no, this is a 90s action film. It's called Drive, released in 1997. Of course, this is not the Drive from a few years ago. Actually, there's probably a whole bunch of movies that are just called Drive. This one happens to be from 1997. Directed by a guy named Steve Wang, who has had a diverse career in the movies. Actually started as a makeup artist and an effects guy, working with folks like Rick Baker, Stan Winston, Dick Smith. He's got credits on things like Predator and Harry and the Hendersons, Gremlins 2, and can't forget the classic Hell Comes to Frogtown, starring Rowdy Roddy Piper. So this guy has been involved in a lot of unique movies. As a director, his credits include, you know, much smaller stuff, direct-to-video type of things. He did the film called The Guyver, and then its sequel, Guyver Dark Hero. And then he also directed something called Kung Fu Rascals, which I must admit I've never heard of before, but I'm intrigued because I like Kung Fu and I like Little Rascals. So, I mean, maybe it's those two things together. I don't know. But this film, it begins with a special agent from Hong Kong, a guy named Toby Wong, played by Mark Dacascos. He has stowed away on a boat that is coming into San Francisco. And as he arrives, these assassins are trying to find him. And they're led by this kind of nasty hillbilly assassin, a guy named Vic Madison, played by John Piper Ferguson. And he and his goons have come here to intercept Toby. But of course, this leads to a big fight. And long story short, Toby ends up making his escape from the boat. And then he ducks into this bar. And in the bar, he ends up meeting up with this struggling songwriter, a guy named Malik, played by Kadeem Hardison. And when the bad guys then eventually catch up with Toby in the bar, there's more fighting and all that. And then he escapes in Malik's car with this struggling young songwriter in tow. So now you got to be wondering why on earth these guys are after Toby. Well, basically, he has this kind of advanced bio device, is how they describe it, installed into his chest, which gives him superhuman speed and fighting skills, you name it. He becomes this fighting machine, basically. And he doesn't want this evil Chinese corporation, the government, I don't remember exactly what it is, but he doesn't want the bad guys to get a hold of this device. So he has come to America, and he plans to sell the device that's implanted in him to this company in L.A. for several million dollars, get it out of the hands of the bad guys. With this type of money involved, Malik agrees, all right, I'll go with you. I'll take you to L.A. for an equal share of the profits. And from there, the film basically becomes a road trip movie with a bunch of martial arts fight sequences in unique locations peppered throughout. This includes a fight in a quarry, another fight in a mechanic shop, another fight in a motel. And I got to mention, too, the motel is owned by a quirky young lady named Deliverance, played by Brittany Murphy. We'll talk more about her, I'm sure. Eventually, the bad guys send out another guy who has one of these devices in his chest. He's described as being the advanced model, and he shows up for a final showdown with Toby and Malik in a space-themed club that's out in the middle of nowhere. So this is essentially kind of a buddy action film mixed with some sci-fi elements and a whole lot of martial arts stuff. But I'm going to let Matt get us started here on this one. Give us a few of your thoughts on Drive.
So, very good job describing Drive, because, yeah, there was a lot going on. So, great job.
It was a challenge. Yeah.
kudos to you. It's a movie I just saw for the first time a few years ago. I think it had been kind of hard to see for a long time. And I don't think it had a good release. And a company called MVD put out a Blu-ray of it, and it had a director's cut too, which I think had been unavailable because it was like a 20 minute longer director's cut of this. I'm not sure. They kind of think like some slower character moments, but I saw it then and I was kind of like floored by it when I first saw it, because it's, I already said, I love 90s action movies, and this is very like Hong Kong flavored for what's, I mean, technically an American action movie. Like, you feel that in the movie, that this is like definitely way more Hong Kong influenced, which I really appreciate. And it's like, you kind of alluded to that. It's so many different things. It's like, it's a road trip movie. It's a buddy action movie. It's kind of funny. There's a sci-fi element. There's so many great fights. Like, it's kind of this weird quirky touches, like this weird, the TV show with the Dr. Frog.
Yeah.
Like, it's very quirky. Like, it's got a lot of quirks too, which I appreciate, because like, it's not an action movie that takes itself too seriously, I would say, which mm-hmm. These are all things I really appreciate. So, and the fights are great. Like, I think Mark Dacascos is just a super underrated actor in general, and he's a good martial artist, and like, kind of finally got his due when he, like, I feel like mainstream due when he was in John Wick 3, some of the bad guys, and and yeah, he's great in this. It's such a odd pairing of him and Kadeem Hardison, who's a guy I only knew from a show called A Different World.
Yeah, me too, pretty much.
And I didn't even recognize him the first time, because I feel like his hair is completely different, and I'm used to seeing him with like those like flipped up glasses, like those right. shades.
That was his trademark back then.
That was his trademark. And I was like, oh, it's the same guy from A Different World. And yeah, I just kind of, when I first saw it, I really kind of flipped for it, because I just thought it was so much fun. And there was a lot of Hong Kong influence getting into 90s American action movies, but this one just does it really well and does something kind of different and weird with it too, which I appreciate. So yeah, I just think it's a really fun movie that I think is finally getting kind of its reappraisal, because like I said, I don't think it was easy to see for a very long time, and I think it was just straight to video when it came out. So you know,
yeah, I think it was straight to video, and maybe even had a run right around, either right as it was released on video or maybe even a little bit before on HBO first. But I mean, it's definitely not a theatrical feature, though some of the things that I read indicated that some of the filmmakers, the distributor, I don't know, actually considered a theatrical run at one point because they thought it was so strong. And I got to agree with them. I was like, hey, this could have made it in the theaters. This isn't necessarily just direct to video.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they probably would have stopped because I guess they probably thought they were lacking like true like superstar power, you know,
right.
like the household
yeah.
name. But I mean, it's very entertaining. I feel like it would appeal to a lot of people because it's a lot of different things besides just a straightforward action movie. So I wish it got a good, better theatrical release. I think it could have done something maybe, or it would have more of a cult following by now, I'm sure. Because people would have been like, I saw that weird movie in a theater in 1987, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because when, you know, we started kind of talking about having you on the show and what movie are we going to discuss? I mean, when I invite folks on, I usually say, do you have any ideas or do you want me to toss you some ideas or whatever? And you had mentioned this one and you were like the second or third person that I had heard bring this movie up just within the last couple of weeks. And I was like, okay, maybe we should check this one out. And, I thought this was a great surprise. I mean, you know, my expectations are, you know, going to be at a certain level when we're dealing with something that is direct to video. But I think this definitely raises the bar. I mean, like you said, I think one of the great charms of this movie is that it takes a lot of different elements of a lot of different genres and rolls it all into one, nice, fun little package here, and chief among them being that it's a road trip movie. I am a sucker for road trip flicks. I love that genre, whether it's, you know, Midnight Run or the Muppet movie. I just, you know, I love where you get a bunch of characters going across the country for some reason. And so, you know, that element I thought was a lot of fun here. And especially we could talk more about this in a bit, but I love how the film kind of plays off the whole just roadside America vibe and kind of, you know, like odd motels and diners and things like that. It's just a really fun touch. But then when you add in, you know, the martial arts stuff and I've got a soft spot for martial arts movies as well. And then the buddy element, I mean, the 90s is prime real estate when it comes to the buddy films. And this one does it really well. I think the dynamic between the two lead characters is really great. It actually, you know, as I was watching, I was going, oh, okay, they're trying to riff on the Rush Hour vibe. But no, Rush Hour came the year after this. So right, like, hey, they did it first.
Yeah, they beat him to it. Yeah, it's and I like that their chemistry, there's definitely friction when they first meet, but mostly I feel like they are two guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, that get along, but you know, like they're not constantly bickering, you know. but they have a fun, it's such a random pairing, but again, it somehow works and I really like them together. It's so much stuff that I like. And like, yeah, I was going to say too, it's crazy. This was DTV. I forgot if I said this, but that it cost, I think I heard it cost $3.5 million and they had 6 weeks to shoot this, which is, for all the fights that they had and stunts, is crazy that they only had 6 weeks because like Hong Kong movies, from what I understand, take months like to shoot stuff, like because the fights are so elaborate and they're so planned out. And this movie, it also like never stops throwing action at you. This time I was really like, man, they just don't let up. Like it feels they barely go 5 minutes without an action beat sometimes, like, which is very impressive again, for the budget and for the amount of time they had to shoot it. They cram so much in and it's really well done. I believe the fight coordinator whose name I'm totally blanking on, but he's like a pretty well-renowned fight coordinator, like from Hong Kong and other places. He's done a bunch of other things. I will find it at some point, but
I think I've got it here. And I'm going to butcher the name. It's Koichi Sakamoto is the Sakamoto fight choreography dude on this one. And yeah, it looks like he spent a lot of time on the Power Rangers television show and various other things. So yeah, and you know, busy guy.
Some good fights with the Power Rangers. I have friends on Twitter who are like big action people, and they will defend the Power Rangers fights as actually being pretty well choreographed.
I agree, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I a few years back was doing some blog posts for a friend that was doing, we were working our way through various superhero television shows episode by episode. And I got to do the first few seasons of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And I was like, yeah, the fights are good in this.
Yeah. And him and Steve Wang, I think, also had done some power stuff. And I was kind of noticing like some of these fights, you kind of have like a Power Rangers feel to them in the way that they're shot and the way that they're the fighting style.
Oh, yeah, the Dutch angles, that type of thing. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, the angles, everything. It's not exactly a Power Rangers fight, but I love the fight in the motel, especially when Mark Dacascos gets, like, the rubber boots on his hands because he's trying to fight off the electric, like, rods they're using on him, mm-hmm. which is just, like, a really clever and funny kind of touch to the fight, but it's still, like, a really impressive, fast-paced fight scene. Like, Mark Dacascos is a very fast fighter from what I could tell in the movie. Like, he's got some speed, and they show him doing a bunch of stuff, which is really impressive. So that's why this time I was like, man, this movie is just like the pace is relentless, which I appreciate because one thing I appreciate is movies does not let you get bored, and Drive does not let you get bored at all.
No. Yeah. The fights move quickly. They're edited very well. I mean, it's that type of thing where we don't linger on one shot for too terribly long. You know, they hit a certain shot so they can give you a really good gag, and then we cut and we do a different angle and such. And that just gives it this really frenetic pace, and the action is really, really good. And it's, you're talking about the budget, and I'm like, one of the things that kind of stuck out to me about this movie is that it seems like they just kind of found an interesting location and said, okay, we can do a fight here, you know, and that's, you know, kind of how they structure this whole thing. Okay, we got access to a quarry for a few days. Well, let's go do a fight sequence there. We got this old right. motel that they're going to let us blow up. Let's do a fight sequence there. And though I've often wondered if, you know, like Jackie Chan movies are sometimes like that, where they just go, let's find some good locations. And as long as we can put Jackie in a good location, he's going to find something interesting to do. And it kind of feels like they're doing the same thing here. And it works. I mean, you mentioned the motel sequence. One of my questions was going to be, what are the standout moments for you when it comes to the fight sequences?
It's definitely that motel sequence. That might be our favorite fight in the whole movie, just for how it shot. And just, I love that. I don't know why I love that gag so much, of him putting the boots on just to fight the electric rods. Like, I think it's just like such a neat touch. And then the end fight scene when they're in the space theme bar, which is a
pizza
area.
Planet. It looks like Pizza Planet.
That's what, like Pizza Planet. It's like, is it Area 51 or 52, or it's some kind of play on? It's this great looking place. Like, it just looks so neat. It does look like Pizza Planet, which is funny. And just the action in there, like all that stuff. It's those are like my standout sequence. And then them just blowing the motel up is so crazy to me. Oh. Like, that's massive that, explosion.
It's huge. It's great. And it reminded me a bit of, like, it made me think of, what's that Chuck Norris one? Invasion USA. Oh. There's a sequence in there where the terrorists come and essentially blow up this neighborhood. And you see them like firing rockets into, you know, houses, and the whole house explodes. And I remember reading up on it that, you know, this was a neighborhood in Atlanta, Georgia, that had been slated to be torn down so they could build. It's now where the rental car facility is for the Atlanta airport. Okay. So if you ever go rent a car at the Atlanta airport, that's where the neighborhood that they blew up in Invasion USA was. But anyway, I thought, okay, well, this is the same type of thing. The producers of this film probably just went and found some old rundown roadside motel that, and they were like, oh yeah, you can blow this thing up. And they blew the whole thing up, and it's spectacular.
Yeah, it is very spectacular. I complain about it all the time. I feel like I have a broken record, but I just love seeing like things done practically in movies, and like especially a movie that didn't have much money and resources. Like, this movie still did a massive explosion and blew up this hotel for real, like really blew it up. And it looks so good. It's just, you can't, like, you can try to replicate it, but it just looks better to actually do it. I know it's sometimes hard to find things to literally to blow up, but, you know, when the opportunity presents itself, your action movie, blow up a real building if they can.
If you can blow it up, blow it up. Yes, that's the recipe for success right there. Yeah, I like the motel sequence as well. I mean, a part of that, I think, was just the charm of, again, like the roadside motel, you know, a little bit cheesy, a little bit run down. I like the way that they use props to that, like they use a mattress from the room at some point, you know, a lot of creative stuff going on there. I think the standout fight sequence for me, though, was the rock quarry. I really dug just, you know, them doing all this choreography and leaping over all this equipment that I don't have any idea what it's actually used for, but it looks cool. And then plus just add the fact that Mark Dacascos and Kadeem Hardison are essentially handcuffed together through the whole sequence.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, creates some nice gags as well.
That's always, yes, that is a good gag. I mean, they did it again in the handcuffed together gag in the new Mission Impossible this past year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always a recipe for good stuff. And actually, you have to handcuff people together. And yeah, I mean, even the opening scene on the boat, I mean, it's like, it's so hard to pick because they're all pretty great action sequences. So spoiled with action.
One thing too, I forgot about when we were talking about the motel. The highlight for me of that, because I was just like, all right, this is a great sequence. What are you going to do now? And of course, they blow the thing up. But the way that they blow the thing up, you know, our hillbilly assassin guy pulls out not just a bazooka, it's this triple barreled bazooka. It's just like, does this thing even exist in the real world? It's like crazy.
Yeah, that I did laugh kind of when he pulls that out. I'm like, this is just fantastic. Like this is my kind of movie. A triple barreled bazooka. It's like, just has that in his truck. He pulls it out. And then I love it's kind of a cliche almost with the heroes run because he's shooting behind them and they're jumping from the explosions. Like, it's like, just shoot ahead of him at some point. But no, the whole movie kind of feels like it almost takes place in I don't want to say an alternate reality, but it definitely takes place in weird, quirky reality. Like, everyone's a little left of center, a little off. Like, the TV shows they're watching are weird and kind of stupid. I'm like, it's supposed to be an alternate America 1997. Like, it's just slightly off.
I would agree with that. Definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, especially as we, you know, get into some of the characters like this hillbilly assassin guy and especially Brittany Murphy. The characters are a bit quirky, a bit odd. And it does feel like they're maybe in a slightly skewed version of 1997. But before we talk about the characters and the actors and such more, one more thing I want to throw out that impressed me about this movie. I mean, for all the praises we've heaped on it when it comes to the action sequences and you know, just the choreography and how wild these scenes get, for a direct-to-video action film, I was really impressed with the script. I think the script is just really clever. It's got this quick, punchy dialogue in it. It's full of weird cultural references. I mean, they bring up everything from kung fu films to Sesame Street to Popeye's Fried Chicken, you know, and it's maybe I'm just charmed by this because I'm the guy that's always bringing up odd references when I'm talking to people. But I just loved that we had this script that was peppered with all these weird references. It just gave the film a whole nother level of charm for me.
Yeah, I mean, it adds a lot of it adds a color to the movie. It's more colorful than a bland action movie where they just talk about the plot and what they're doing and where they're going. That could be some of that 90s kind of influence of Tarantino, or one's we got to throw references into things brands and food and, real type things. I don't know, but it does add, I was thinking at this time, the script's really good because we're talking about how quirky it is. And that starts at the script level, I imagine. And then, all these little touches that are kind of almost you could say coloring outside the lines or something, you know, it's like that most action movies wouldn't have these little beats, these weird beats with the bad guys who were kind of weird. And the Brittany Murphy character, I feel wouldn't exist in a different version of this because it's she's just a funny comic relief character that comes out of nowhere. And it's just weird. we'll talk about her more. But yeah, the script does add a lot. It's definitely not your typical 90s action movie or a typical action movie in general, because I feel it has room for these little odd touches that most things would probably dump and just say, hey, focus on fighting the bad guys and the plot and getting here and there, you know, that and this and that. So I appreciate that stuff, because most action movies probably would skip that stuff or cut it out at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, though, the one thing that was more of a disappointment for me with this is, you know, when we talked about how there's a bunch of different elements to this film, you know, it's a buddy movie, it's a road trip, it's a, you know, a kung fu movie and that. It's also got a sci-fi element, and I was a little bit disappointed that the sci-fi element is, you know, kind of just a MacGuffin. It's just an excuse for Mark Dacascos' character to have all these mad skills and such. They don't really lean into the sci-fi too much, and I kind of thought, you could have done more with that. That would have, I think, added a little bit more, because, and again, maybe even put it further into being a slightly alternate reality type of zone, because, you know, the idea of, you know, kind of having these somehow enhanced fighters in this film is cool, but we don't really get into, you know, kind of more of that sci-fi element. You know, that's put out there, and then it's just, okay, now watch them fight.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this time too. I was, you could almost forget there's a sci-fi element at certain times in the movie. Like, you could almost, because he's not super obvious with, like, he doesn't, you know, he looks like a human, but he right. tells you he has this thing inside of him. And they do bring up at the end, it almost becomes like a Terminator thing at the end, where it's like, he's like the T-800, and then they bring in the advanced model, mm-hmm. you know, like the advanced Terminator type thing, which I think he's just called advanced model is how he's credited as the other guy.
Yeah.
but yeah, I agree with you. I kind of wish they could have leaned more into the sci-fi aspect, and it almost does feel like it kind of gets forgotten about at certain times. Maybe that could have been maybe a budgetary thing, I don't know, like or they just kind of like, you just kind of were like, well, we're not going to focus on that, I'm not sure. But I do kind of wish there was a little more of that, because they obviously touch on it, it's a part of the story, but it's not touched, probably used enough, I would say. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, let's talk a bit about our cast here, our lead characters and such. You know, we did hit on our two leads a little bit, but maybe I want to dig into it a bit more. You know, I'll start with Mark Dacascos. Going into this movie, it was like, okay, that guy. I don't know his name, but I know that guy from something, you know, and he's been in various things. You know, when I was, you know, kind of watching it and starting to go through his filmography, I was like, oh yeah, John Wick 3. Oh, Double Dragon. He's in Double Dragon, you know.
a movie I grew up with and have a soft spot for, even though it's like kind of insane and probably not very good, but it's like, I find it weirdly very entertaining.
Anybody that was a teenager in the 80s like me and you grew up crushing on Alyssa Milano, you know, you had to watch Double Dragon. But but, you know, and then too, the one that blew me away, I was like, he was the host of the American version of Iron Chef. I used to watch that thing. Right, yeah. You know, so this guy's been all over the place, but I was really impressed with what he brings in here. I mean, for one thing, you know, he's certainly got the skills when it comes to the martial arts stuff. But I think that he goes into this role knowing very well kind of what his place is when it comes to the dynamic of the characters. Because, you know, he's very much a man of few words, pretty stoic, pretty, you know, just, you know, down to business type of thing through this film. And that works very well because Kadeem Hardison's character is just talking a mile a minute. You know, the guy doesn't shut up. And so I think that just the tone that Mark Dacascos brings to his character in this, it's a good contrast to what Kadeem Hardison is bringing. And yet the two work very well together.
Yeah, and that's funny you're saying that. I'm thinking of more of like the Rush Hour connection too, because I think for a large part of Rush Hour, Chris Tucker does all the talking. He's like the fast talking guy, and then Jackie Chan barely speaks for the first part of it, so he's like, oh, I speak English. But Kadeem Hardison definitely helps like balance it out, because yeah, he does a bunch of the talking, and Mark Dacascos not as much, but I think he could do it. But you're right, he does know his role is like to kind of be the silent, like, cool guy who's kicking everybody's butt, you know. And he could do that kind of thing, because I think he's really good in John Wick 3. Like, he's like weirdly offbeat in that. He's a weird bad guy, because he's like, seems like he's always like super psyched to see John Wick, even though he's gonna kill him. Like, he's like, like, he really thinks John Wick is super cool, but he's like, I gotta fight you. But it's like, he's like a fan. But and I forgot, Mark Dacascos was also, just something else he was on that I watched when I was younger, there was a Crow TV show called The Crow Stairway to Heaven that he was the lead on.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's pretty good on that. That show is probably one of the better Crow-related things that's come out of that movie. So I like him. Kadeem Hardison, I knew from literally nothing except Different World. That's
just Different World. And he annoyed the heck out of me on that show. I mean, just, you know, I wasn't a religious watcher of that show. I mean, you know, must see TV Thursday night on on NBC, you know, once Family Ties went off the air, they put A Different World on in its place. I didn't tend to watch as much, but I was actually impressed by him in this because I was like, here's a guy that back in the day I thought was pretty annoying, and he's pretty likable in this film.
Yeah, I think he is pretty likable. I mean, he's going through some stuff of his own, and then he gets pulled into this crazy adventure with Mark Dacascos, and you know, he's going through like a divorce and all this stuff, and he's like down on his luck, and then literally just is at this bar and just gets sucked into this whole thing. And yeah, I found him very likable. It kind of made me wish I'd seen him in more stuff. And like, I it looks like I'm looking at IMDb. He acted in a lot of things, and it looks like he still acts, but I just didn't know him for much. But I'm like, he's really good in this. I wish he had more shots to be in like bigger movies, is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Well, before we get to Brittany Murphy, because I really want to talk about Brittany Murphy, I want to talk about the villains, because I really like this guy, this chief villain, or I guess, you know, maybe he's more like the chief lackey here, the hillbilly guy, Vic Madison, which, first of all, how many hillbillies out there are named Vic Madison? But whatever. It didn't sound like a very hillbilly name. But this actor that plays him,
John Piper Ferguson.
I was like, all right, should I know this guy from anything? And I pulled up his IMDb, and he's like been in lots of things in, you know, little parts, you know, nothing too terribly big, but he's got this great meaty part in this film, and he just about steals the show if it weren't for Brittany Murphy. You know, I first of all, love the concept that you've got this guy that's like this, you know, city hillbilly type of guy. I mean, he's got the hat, he's got the boots, he's got the bolo tie, he's got the works, working for bad guys out of Hong Kong, chasing down martial arts experts and such. It's totally outlandish. It doesn't make any sense, but it's just so much fun. I love like when he's like calling up his Hong Kong bosses and such, which I got to mention too, his Hong Kong boss is the guy that runs Nakatomi in Die Hard, the guy that gets killed by Hans Gruber. Yeah. But I love he like gets on the little video phone thing, and this guy in Hong Kong answers it, and he's talking Chinese, and he's always like, English, please, English. You can see my face, right? Talk English.
Yeah, I'm like, how do these people meet up? How'd they find this random hillbilly guy to work for them? I mean, because he does do the bulk of the work. It's like, he is like the lead lackey, I think. He's the one who's actually there on the ground because they're over in Hong Kong. And so he really is doing the bulk of everything. And he's very entertaining because he's just like, again, somebody who's like offbeat. Like, this is not your typical, I don't think he's your typical like action movie henchman. You know, like chief lackey, he's just weird enough with the way he dresses and the stuff he does. And that stuff is hilarious when he's trying to call them in Hong Kong. And he's like, please, English, please. Like, because he's their guy somehow. They somehow found him. And he's their guy trying to kill them with his triple bazooka that he pulls out.
Well, and even when like, he's like talking to Kadeem Hardison, you know, he's, you know, getting ready to kill him. And they start having this little conversation about fried chicken and stuff. And it's like, it's great. And and also I love that, you know, I mean, we talk about him being a lackey, but his lackey then is Bob the Goon himself, Tracy Walter, which, you know, glad to see Tracy Walter show up in anything. You know, so.
Yeah, he'd been in way more than I realized. I was looking at his IMDb. I was like, wow, he was everywhere for a while. I love this character's name is Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Just so many weird quirky touches and great little like character actors, some people I weren't familiar with, some people I did recognize, but yeah, like just all these like great people with character, you know, like they're there.
Well, that sounds like a segue if I've ever heard one, because I mean that is a perfect description of Brittany Murphy's character and doesn't even begin to scratch the surface. She stole the show for me, but I want to let you take it first. Give me your thoughts on what Brittany Murphy is bringing. Also, before we do that show, important to note, this is kind of that in-between time for Brittany Murphy. She's done Clueless, but it's before she's in, like, you know, these romantic comedies and such that she would start to be in a few years later. So she's still kind of in, you know, the not quite terribly famous zone at this point.
Yeah, it is. It's a weird time for her, right? Because it's like, yeah, post-Clueless, but not into any other huge stuff yet. Like, because she isn't 99 is like a bigger year for her. So yeah, it's a weird in between. Mm. But yeah, I'm so glad you like honed in on her, because I feel like everyone I've heard talk about Drive has to mention that Brittany Murphy comes in this movie like a bolt of lightning, and just kind of like the movie already has like enough, I feel like it has good energy, but she like pops it to like another level, because she's just so like, how do I put it? Like bubbly and crazy and quirky, and she's really funny, and she's just so unbelievably full of energy, and like she's like gets the movie to like the second half. I feel like she kind of bridges, I think, the first half, the second half, and like, you know, and then kind of just comes in. Yeah, just comes in, just a shot of energy right to the movie, is hitting on Kadeem Hardison so hard, like, throwing herself at him. I'd forgotten how much she throws herself at him. And it's just so entertaining. Like, comes in and like, yeah, steals the movie out of nowhere for like one section, and then disappears and is gone for the back half of the movie. But it's incredible. It's like, what a great, like, supporting role. I love her in this. I'm glad you sound like you like latched onto her in this as well.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, from the moment she comes on the screen, like I say, she brings this energy, and it's so weird to start with, because like you can tell right from the beginning, the way that she approaches their car as they pull up to the motel. She's sitting in this motel in the middle of nowhere, and nobody ever comes and stays here. And she sees this car pull in, and she's like, oh, there's guests. Oh, you know, and she just lays it on so thick. And it, you know, it just has this wonderful energy to it. I loved that. I didn't know what to make of her character, not just from that beginning, but throughout. I'm like, okay, is she just weird, or is she like a serial killer, or you know, what is going on here? Because there's just this level of strangeness that has suddenly entered with this character, and it's just wonderful. I don't even know how to describe it. Her performance was just so delightful. And and part of it too, I think, is just the setting and all that. Like I say, you know, I love the charm of kind of this motel out in the middle of nowhere. And you know, she's just this oddball that hangs out here and hopes that somebody's going to show up someday. And that's just great. I mean, for me, the biggest disappointment of the movie is that I thought she's going to join these two. She's going to be the third wheel on this and be along for the rest of the ride. But basically, we get this sequence in the middle of the film with the motel, and, you know, things go boom, and then they go off to this diner, and then she's gone. And I was like, oh, what a bummer. I need more of her in this movie.
I know. I kind of wish she stuck around too. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't know what she would have done in the finale. Like, I don't know. She could maybe like fought some. I don't know. She has a fight. I don't know if she's a fighter, but like during all the stuff at the end, maybe she could have helped Kadeem Hardison or something. But like, maybe they were like, we don't know what to do with you past this point, or like maybe her schedule. But I do wish she was in more. I'm always sad when she like kind of says goodbye to the movie. It's like her goodbye, you know. It's like, all right, see ya. It's like, no, come back, you were so much fun. Now that we're talking about her and the hotel she runs by herself and all this stuff, this is almost like she's like the reverse, or not reverse, but like a nice Anthony Perkins from Psycho. Like, she's like the Norm Bates that won't kill you, you know.
It's she like, is, yeah.
But she has the energy of like, is this woman gonna murder me, like if I, you know, go to sleep near her or something? Like, because she talks about how, oh, no one stops at my hotel, and I'm so glad you guys are here, and I'm really having this idea now of her as like the nice version of Norman Bates. Like,
well, and just the fact that her name is Deliverance, I mean, for one thing, this movie, it wears its influences on its sleeve. I mean, I think the fact that they name her Deliverance is clearly a reference to the movie, and you know, just kind of the whole, the mysterious, the odd nature of folks that live out in the middle of nowhere, let's say. But you know, I mean, the film directly references other, you know, martial arts films. At one point, Mark Dacascos, you know, when the cops stop them and you know, they ask, what's your name? He says, Sammo Hung. And I'm like, well, clearly this film is trying to go for that kind of Sammo Hung vibe, that mix of comedy and martial arts and such. And you know, like you said at the beginning, the film doesn't take itself too seriously, so they don't have a problem with just coming right out and saying it.
Yeah, pretty much. They're just like, yeah, we're making a fun action movie and we're going to just reference like things direct. Sammo Hung, why not? Like he makes fun Hong Kong action movies. We're making one of those. Let's just throw Sammo Hung's name in here. Which some people at the time probably know who Sammo Hung even was. Or maybe they did. I think Marshall Hall was on the air. But it's what I think most people know him from in America at first. But it's the kind of reference where it's like, if you get it, you're probably like, oh, I love that. And if you don't get it, you're like, I'll look up who that is later. I don't know who that man is. But it's got to be somebody. But yeah, it just kind of, it just puts it all out there. And yeah, I heard being named Deliverance. I'm sure that was somebody's like joke of, you know, something like to call her Deliverance. But yeah, I love her in this. I appreciate her more the more stuff I see her in. And yeah, it's sad she passed away so young.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he's so good in this. Like, I mean, and it's a tough movie to kind of steal because there's so much going on. And it's like for her to like pop like she does amongst all this like, craziness is like even more impressive. So.
Yeah. When I was done watching this and, you know, I was logging it on my Letterboxd, I pulled up her page because I was like, what of hers have I not seen? I know she's no longer with us. We're not going to get any more Brittany Murphy movies. I was like, I need to make an effort to see some of the other ones that I've missed because she just, in this performance, reminded me of why she was so delightful. So, yeah. Well, before we move into the break here, just give you a chance for any final thoughts you have on this one.
I would just say if you like Hong Kong action or 90s action or buddy cop movies or road trip movies, like Drive will probably be very entertaining for you. I think it's the kind of movie that would play well to a lot of different people. Like if you want to show up to a group of friends, I feel like it has a little something for everybody. So I love Drive. I think it's a super fun movie and just still very underrated, even though it has kind of like we talked about getting like a little more reappraised the past few years, but still widely underseen and just a very good time, like very entertaining movie that will never let you be bored for any minute of the movie.
Yeah, I agree with all of that 100%. I watched this on Tubi, which, I mean, we've said this time and time again on this show. Tubi just continues to prove itself as being one of the best services out there, especially for the type of movies that we talk about on this show. There's just always so much stuff showing up on there, and Drive is on Tubi, and I mean, it's free, folks. You got no excuse. I would definitely watch this one. I had so much fun with this movie. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll hear from another one of our podcasting friends, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
At Cinema Recall, we want to present to you the finest in film analysis.
Yeah, like action and gore and sex.
We will look at classics by Kubrick, Lynch, Godard, De Palma, and Coppola.
I don't know who the f*** that is, but I'm looking at classic bodies of Christina Hendricks, Keanu Reeves, Salma Hayek, Ryan Reynolds.
We are a serious show for film lovers who enjoy indie foreign films, art house gems, and classic black and white features.
Well, I enjoy big budget blockbusters with great action and sexy people. Maybe our podcast can celebrate all aspects of films, like people who feel like your weird way and like people who feel like my weird way can like get together, man.
They can?
Yeah.
Huh. You know, I like that.
Cinema Recall is available everywhere you find great podcasts. Follow them on Facebook and Instagram under Cinema Recall Podcast. And on Twitter at cinema_recall.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few bucks a month, you can support the show and earn access to some bonus features, including a bunch of the older episodes of this show that are no longer available on the main podcast feed. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more, and we thank you for your support.
What was it about the 90s that made movies so much better? How much of an impact did they make during that decade? And while we're at it, can we throw around some 90s slang? Join me, Jason Soto, a lover of all things 90s, as I do a deep dive into cinema from the best era ever. Rabbit Hole Podcast presents That's the Bomb, Yo! 90 Hella Rad Movies from the 90s. You can find this show on Anchor, Apple, Google, anywhere you get podcasts from, or its home location at rabbitholepodcasts.com. And who knows, maybe even Alicia Silverstone will finally accept my date.
Oh, I'm in.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk about another movie that we've enjoyed, something that we want to tell everybody else about so you can check it out for yourself. It might be a forgotten film. It might be an old classic or something that's new in theaters or on streaming. The possibilities are endless. So, Matt, what is your recommendation?
Okay, so something in a very similar vein to Drive. I think they'd be a great double feature because they're similar enough but different enough. They could play well. It's from 1 year later, 1988. It is The Big Hit, directed by Kirk Wong, starring Mark Wahlberg, Lou Diamond Phillips, Christina Applegate, Bakeem Woodbine. Basically, The Big Hit is about Mark Wahlberg plays this hitman named Melvin Smiley who has this little team with him, three guys. They do all these jobs. They have a job where they have to kidnap a rich guy's daughter. And after they've kidnapped her, Mark Wahlberg starts to kind of fall for her. And there's some stuff there. And then chaos ensues, a lot of action. Mark Wahlberg also has to deal with his girlfriend's family with kind of a comedic element while he's trying to also hide a kidnapping victim. So it's kind of like Drive, that it's like a mix of a few different things. There's like a romance, there's a lot of comedy, a lot of action. It definitely has that Hong Kong feel and influence because they love to mix like kind of like goofier comedy and then action. And Kirk Wong is a guy who did a bunch of stuff in Hong Kong. And yeah, it's a movie I saw in the 90s, probably too young to be seeing The Big Hit. And it's very fun. It's like Mark Wahlberg too, before he became like a persona. He's still like very young here and like kind of like, I don't know, more babyface, innocent, like kind of sweet. It's weird. Like, really fun action sequences, like kind of like over the top. There's a lot of great 90s references. I believe there's like a Spice Girls reference. I mean, it's so it's very 90s. Like there's a really funny bit at a video store with like Bakeem Woodbine, which I won't spoil. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's very fun. It's very charming and just, again, very breezy and entertaining and flies by. And I think it's super underrated.
I'm pretty sure I saw this, but it would have been back in 98 or 99. So I have almost no memory of it. I think when you said the title, I was like, all right, I think Lou Diamond Phillips is in that. And that's about all I could remember about it right off the top of my head. So
it's very entertaining. It's very entertaining, that movie.
Yeah, one I will have to revisit, I guess, because yeah, my mind is completely blank on this one, but I'm pretty sure I've seen it. All right, well, the movie that I am going to recommend, I decided to go with something that is, well, let's just say it doesn't take itself too seriously, much like Drive. And it's one that came to mind because it is one that the director of Drive was involved in. And it's one that I have actually recommended on the show before. But as I was looking back through my not terribly well put together records of past episodes, it was about 150 episodes ago that I recommended this. So I think I can get away with recommending this one again. I already mentioned it briefly at the beginning of the show. I am going to recommend from 1988, Hell Comes to Frogtown, which is a 80s post-apocalyptic film, which of course, I mean, those were all over the place in the 80s. They're a lot of fun. And the basics here is that, in this dystopian future, humans are on their way out. The dominant species on the planet is now a race of mutant humanoid frogs. Most humans are sterile, so This story focuses around a guy named Sam Hell, played by Rowdy Roddy Piper. And he is a hot commodity because this guy actually has a sperm count. And so the film has him joining up with Sandahl Bergman to rescue a bunch of fertile ladies who are being held captive in Frogtown. And then the plan is after he rescues them that he gets them all pregnant because we have to save the human race and such. I mean, you know, first of all, like I said, 80s post-apocalyptic films, fun. I mean, I love, you know, a lot of these are made on the cheap, trying to cash in on, you know, stuff like The Road Warrior, and there's just a great charm to that type of thing. This is one that has all the things that you want in a post-apocalyptic movie like that, but like I said, it doesn't take itself seriously at all, so it's very entertaining. And a big part of that is just Roddy Piper. I mean, you know, I'm never going to claim that Roddy Piper is an amazing actor. He had a way, though, of bringing something special to the films that he was in. And he's a great choice for a film like this. Sandahl Bergman, also good. She, you know, of course, a lot of genre films of this age. You know, she was in Conan the Barbarian and things like that. You know, we've got some fun action, wild mutant frog costumes. It's just B-movie fun through and through. So, you know, it was from New World Pictures. It's just the perfect kind of movie that would have that wonderful New World Pictures logo on it back in the 80s. You know, when you saw that logo, you knew you were in for something that was kind of a little bit wild. And Hell Comes to Frogtown is definitely one of those types of films.
Yes, I'm so glad. I just watched it for the first time a few months ago. I'm so glad I've seen this now. I describe a lot of things as like crazy and bonkers. Like Hell Comes to Frogtown is definitely bonkers. Like, it could not believe what I was watching. This was a movie that was made like just such an insane idea. I like Roddy Piper actually as a screen presence. His acting is not the best in Hell Comes to Frogtown, but I really like him in They Live. But some of those wrestlers, like, even not the best actors, they usually have good screen presence, I think. Mm-hmm. Just because of the business they're in. But I usually really like him, but that movie is really something else. I was very entertained by Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Well, Matt, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and your podcast.
Oh, yeah. So the Film Piece podcast should be available everywhere you get podcasts at this point. I think got the bases covered at this point for any app you use to listen to podcasts. We should be there. New episodes usually come out every Monday as long as I'm on schedule. But it's been pretty good lately about being every Monday there's a new episode. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter, or I believe X these days, as they're calling it, at Film Piece Pod. You can follow the podcast and me on Instagram at just Film Feast, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter at MapBled87 and Letterboxd if you want at MapBled87 as well. I think that's all our social media covered. So, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks again for being on the show. And I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Well, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the Forgotten Filmcast. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, they're over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. We welcome your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And don't forget about our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn all about how you can help support this show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again real soon.
There's nothing like a mean go-getter. You know what they say, you could tell what a man's like by the kind of car that he drives.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.